Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me and my very special guest, Rachel Grant. Just to kind of tell you a little bit about how Rachel and I met, a little over 4 years ago, I started a blog called Together We Heal and kept running across the name of a person who was very active in helping my fellow survivors, and her name was, of course, Rachel Grant. So I reached out to her, and she was just so helpful in giving me some advice and guidance and counsel about this community that we call survivors of childhood sexual abuse. Since then, she's been helpful to me both personally and professionally. I've done a number of her workshops, and it's helped me so much with my own healing. So over the last 4 years, she's become a trusted colleague, a valued friend, and I just thank the world of Rachel, and I know if you open up your hearts and mind to her, she can be just as much of a help to you as well. Tonight we'll start off by sharing a little bit about Rachel, and then she will tell us her story, why she developed her Beyond Surviving program. Following that, we'll jump right into tonight's discussion on how to get out of your head and into bed so you can enjoy intimate, playful, thrilling, and satisfying emotional and sexual relationships. Rachel is the founder of Rachel Grant Coaching and is a sexual abuse recovery coach. She works with survivors of childhood sexual abuse who are beyond sick and tired of feeling broken, unfixable, and burdened by the past. She holds a master's in counseling psychology and is the author of a book you need to read, trust me on this, Beyond Surviving, the Final Stage in Recovery from Sexual Abuse. Through her personal journey of recovery from sexual abuse, Rachel has gained insight and understanding about what it takes to overcome the negative effects of this abuse. This makes it possible for her to understand, appreciate, and empathize with her client's struggles on an intimate level. She provides a compassionate and challenging approach for her clients while using personal coaching as opposed to standard therapeutical models. You can learn more about Rachel and her Beyond Surviving program at rachelgrantcoaching.com. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much, David. I just love you and your introduction. You're just so full of it, full of energy, and so happy to be here with you and everyone else who's joining us tonight.
Now, it's my honor. I assure you of that. So we'll get us started. Could you share a bit more about your story, how you got started working with survivors of childhood sexual abuse?
Yeah, definitely. And just before I get into that, I first want to take a moment to acknowledge everyone on the call and for really joining us tonight. You know, David and I really know very personally how difficult it can be to confront those areas of your life that you often wish maybe weren't there or you try to pretend aren't there. And by just simply acknowledging, you know, that things are not working, and in seeking support, you've already taken the most important first step toward freedom. And how do I know that? Because I've been there myself and been on this journey. My story really begins when I was 5 years old, middle-class kid, growing up in Oklahoma, acre out the back door. And my grandfather came to live with my family. And I was always a very innate nurturer, so I would help my mom and dad take care of him by doing simple things like bringing him a bowl of cereal, keeping him company, reading to him. And we also spent a lot of hours on our front porch swinging, talking, laughing, watching people kind of playing in the park across the street. So he really was a friend and a quiet companion. One day, glowing from just having turned 10, I was hanging out watching some, I don't know, cheesy 80s TV or something when I heard my grandfather come down the hall. And I knew he was heading outside, so I hopped up and went to the door, and my plan was to just hold kind of our springy screen door open for him that day and then, you know, go back to my show like I sometimes did. But that day was very different. When my grandfather pulled my arm and motioned for me to sit with him on the front porch swing, I didn't really think much of it. It was a nice day. I imagine I thought he wanted some company. And I've always been a very snuggly person as well. Even at that age, I still love to crawl in, you know, with the chair with my dad and watch game shows. So when my grandfather put his arm around me, I just snuggled in close where I could feel his, you know, fudgy orange and brown sweater. that day was the first day my grandfather molested me. And I was terrified in that moment. I was frozen, very confused. I remember thinking that maybe he just didn't realize where he was touching me, so I shifted my body, but his hand returned. And that was the first day of many that my grandfather would really violate our friendship and rob me, really, of my peace and my innocence in many ways. And, you know, David, it went on for months, and it got worse, but nobody really noticed, and I certainly didn't tell, because I just knew I'd done something to cause it. You know, to everyone else, I was kind of the same old Rachel, laughing and cracking jokes, but in my room all alone, I'd really find myself with all of these, like, confusing new thoughts, and almost like doing battle with these thoughts and these feelings, right? Like, I deserve it. It's my fault. I'm ugly. I'm worthless. And fortunately, when my parents discovered what was happening, they immediately removed him from our home. And I'm very grateful for that, because having done this work for some time, I know that when a survivor is not believed or not, you know, protected in that way, it just kind of adds another layer of support. And so what was amazing, though, was, like, even though he was gone, like, that did not make my thoughts stop. You know, my mind.
Of course not.
Yeah. It was just my worst enemy at that point. You made it happen. Nobody loves you. Why bother living? You must have liked it, or you would have done something about it. And, you know, my parents did want me to get some help, and they even found me a counselor, but... There, no way. Are you kidding me? There's, like, no way in hell I'm talking to anybody about this, let alone a man, right?
Right.
And I just wanted to pretend that everything was okay. So I kind of buried my head in the sand and just tried to be a quote-unquote normal little girl. And I really did spend my teen years kind of learning how to perform. You know, keep the outside looking great while everything is just chaos and crazy on the inside. And I was a straight-A student, had a job, played volleyball, but it was all kind of a part of this performance, because behind closed doors, I was full of fear about, you know, self-worth, value, confused to no end about relationships and trust and sex. And I felt alone a lot of the time. You know, like, nobody could really understand me. And
you feel like you're the only person this is happening to.
Exactly, exactly. And FYI, folks, David's going to be doing a great blog this Wednesday on being alone and the loneliness. So make sure you check out the Rachel Grant Coaching blog.
nice segue.
He's going to be talking about that. Yeah. And so, you know, it just one thing after another after another. And by my early 20s, I was just fed up, you know, with feeling that way. And I started doing all the things you do, reading books, going to therapy, talking to friends. And by my mid-20s, I did feel a little bit better. But I was also still going around this mountain of shame and anger and acting out. And my goodness, by my late 20s, here I am going through a divorce, living in a city with no friends, no community, and still in pain and feeling ashamed as a result of the abuse that had happened 16 years earlier. And my God, I just realized I have got to do something, because if I keep moving in the same direction, I am just going to live out the rest of my life feeling alone and broken and miserable, just kind of merely surviving. And that's really when I had my aha moment, David. I was like, you know what? I do not want to just survive my life. I want to live it. And right. I became just adamant. And I realized that I had understood the abuse as an experience. I had made all sorts of connections about, you know, here's why, you know, I don't trust others. And that's because of this and all of these things. But the most critical question remained unanswered by any of those books or therapists, which was, what do I do about it? How do I actually change this?
Exactly. A lot of people talk about it, but then there's nothing beyond that.
Exactly. And that's really the Beyond Surviving program. It became my answer to that question. It's really the culmination of everything that I've learned along the way. through experience by completing my master's degree in counseling psychology, studying neuroscience. And you know, what I'm sharing with you all today is just one part of my complete program, but rest assured, you know, today's lessons alone will make a huge difference in your life. And I'm really honored to share my discoveries and be a part of your journey and your healing. And by the end of our time together, you will have an understanding of how to overcome some of the obstacles that are keeping you isolated and really unfulfilled.
Well, you know, and that brings us to the question of the evening, you know, and being a male survivor, it's something that I really appreciate, the things you and I have talked about, things I've learned from you. So let's ask that question. Why do men who have been abused struggle with relationships and sexuality?
Yeah, you know, when it comes to sex, there can be a lot that gets in the way of it being, you know, great, like really, really great. And some guys aren't sure what to do. Some guys aren't sure they can do it. And some guys don't even get the chance to find out because they really hide out and disconnect and just avoid it altogether. And then, of course, there is this other big obstacle that can stand in the way, past abuse. And I'm not just talking about sexual abuse, though that's kind of the obvious one. Emotional and physical and verbal abuse all really impact the development of a man's perspective and opinion of himself, his partner, relationships, and sex. And so it can really make experiencing freedom and ease in these areas difficult. And essentially what I've learned is that sexual freedom comes down to a few key sticking points. And they actually have nothing to do with what happens in the bedroom. Go figure, right?
Exactly.
But they do need to be in dress so that you can enjoy healthy, intimate, and sexual relationships. And so, you know, what they are is an absolute and overwhelming fear of being rejected. The second one is a lack of trust in others and one's self. The third is really avoiding vulnerability like it's the plague. Like, no thank you, never. And
we're men. We're not supposed to be vulnerable, right?
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, finally being really disconnected from the present.
Well, so on that first one, the rejection, what can men do about this fear of rejection?
Okay, yeah, let's get to that. So I want to start off by sharing a little quote about fear from Cynthia Cubitton Littlefield, who authored Shelter from the Storm. She says, when something hurts you, to be afraid of that source of pain is normal. However, the fear and isolation begin to create more fear and loneliness. You know, one of the hardest things about being afraid is that the fear takes on a whole life of its own. You know, a single moment, one dog nipping at you becomes a fear of all dogs. Or one person hurting you, whether that was because of abuse or general mistreatment, kind of becomes this fear that everyone will hurt you. Being rejected by one partner turns into being rejected by every person, you know, and our fears are not to be taken lightly because they really can be so strong that they immobilize us.
Compounds one on the other. I see what you're saying.
Yes. And so I want to just actually pause for a moment so everyone listening can really take a look at the fears that are keeping you stuck and out of relationships. Because it's really hard to have sex if you don't have a partner, at least, you know, more than masturbating.
Right.
You know? You know, and even with that said, masturbation even becomes richer, you know, when you are able to deal with fear. So I shared with everyone when you registered a handout, and if you didn't get that, you can download it by going to bit.ly/forminonly-beyondsurviving. bit.ly/forminonly-beyondsurviving. And this is where you can begin jotting down the fears that are coming to mind. You know, maybe it's the fear of always being alone or not being lovable, not being man enough to please your partner. And, you know, this is for you. You're not going to show this to anyone. So just be open and honest with yourself about what it is that you're scared of. And, you know, we may have a lot of fears in our lives given the experiences that we've had. But what I've found, David, is that fear really causes us to remain frozen. There can kind of be this something that's comforting, you know, about the familiar. Yet we have these moments when we can take a step forward or we can simply keep our feet planted. And it's those moments, like the choices we make in those moments, that really end up defining us in a lot of ways. And, you know, I get it, though. I you know, reasons for standing still are numerous because,
right.
you know, right. movement, you know, creates momentum. And we can be unsure or afraid of, like, where that momentum is going to take us. And so we may feel a bit unsteady when we take some new first steps. It's kind of like, you know, toddlers fumbling around. But the beautiful thing is that those fumbly steps are so critical because without them, we never have the opportunity to experience walking or leaping or dancing or running.
They're the ones that build the strength.
That's it. Exactly. So now what I want you all to understand is that fear can be a good emotion, right? It can warn us something is wrong here. But generally speaking, the fears we're talking about today are based on false beliefs and actually aren't protecting us. They're not doing us any good. They're not keeping us safe from anything. And as a result, we just remain stuck, kind of repeating the same patterns over and over again. And the more we feed those fears and pay attention, the more stuck we are. So I want to share with you an example. You know, one of my clients hadn't been on a date in 2 years. His prior relationship had ended really badly. And as a result, he'd really started to believe that no woman would ever want him. And he was just stuck in this loop of going to work, coming home, going to work, coming home. And he had even stopped hanging out with his guy friends because he didn't want them trying to hook him up, you know, when he went to the bar, like, hey, check her out. You want to go talk to her or whatever. He was seriously stuck. So how do we transform a fear? Well, I want to take you all through a little exercise here. And we're going to identify the payoffs and costs of your particular fear. And we'll then create a measurable result that will move you into action to challenge the fear. So I'll use my client's experience to illustrate this. And you can use the handout to practice challenging one of the fears you identified earlier. So the first step is just simply to name the fear. For instance, my client was afraid that no one would want him. The next step is to identify the payoff of that fear. In other words, what are you getting out of or what are you getting to avoid? So my client was able to both reinforce the underlying belief that he wasn't good enough and also to believe he was avoiding being hurt. Right? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Now, here's the key step. You want to check in and see if you're really getting the payoff because is the fear even doing the job you've assigned it? So for my client, he was in fact reinforcing a negative belief. However, he was not avoiding being hurt. In fact, he hurt every day because he was lonely and disconnected and full of self-hate.
Right. I hear you.
Yeah. So now the next step is to identify the cost of the fear. What are you missing out on because of the fear? For my client, he was missing out on fun, connection, love, sex, happiness, being able to go out, enjoy his life. And then finally, you want to identify one small thing that you can do to really challenge your fear by getting into action. Like, imagine that the fear doesn't exist. There is no such thing as that fear. It doesn't exist at all. What's the first thing that you would do? And for my client, he decided to set up a weekly guys' night so that he could get out of the rut of just staying, you know, at home. And after about a month of going out with his buddies, you know, he started to feel more connected and confident. He was then able to really kind of start chatting up, you know, gals, and along with using some of the other skills we'll talk about today, he met someone, and they've now been together for many, many years. Isn't that cool?
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that I really want you all to notice is that I didn't actually spend a lot of time on the fear. well, why are you afraid? Let's talk about what happened to you to make you afraid. You know, we did, just what do you think you're getting out of it? Name it, and what do you think you're getting out of it?
I mean, even as you were reading that, and even as the things we talked about, I didn't even think about that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Instead, we put all of our focus on the action or choice you can make to counter the fear. And here's why. Here's the psychology of it. Believe it or not, fear and confidence are kind of in the same camp. You know, we often think, well, when I'm no longer afraid, I'll do blank. Or when I feel confident, I'll blank. However, that's not actually how it works or how the brain works. What we have to do is take action to counter the fear or that build confidence, and that's how the fear or confidence fear goes away or confidence grows. And look, you can actually like apply this to anything that you're scared of. You know, I had fears about starting this program. But if I had waited until the fear went away, we wouldn't be here today. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so instead of giving into that fear, I focused on what one little step I could take each day. And now I get to work with survivors every day, and it's amazing. So for everyone listening, I want you to just, you know, take a moment to connect with that. Like, can you think of a time in your life in which you've experienced this, you know, where you started out in fear or lacked confidence, and then through practice and experience, you became confident and less fearful? Because what I want you to know is that you are so much more powerful and so much more adept than you might give yourself credit for. You've actually done this before, and you've done it probably successfully many times, maybe not in some areas, but definitely in others. So you can take the same resourcefulness, fortitude, and creativity and really use it in all of these areas. And so it's okay to have fears or lack confidence. We all have this. But to get around it, we first have to investigate what we're getting out of it, what we're missing out on because of it, and then identify one small thing we can do to move us forward so that we can reach out to others, start conversations, go out on dates, and create opportunities for relationships. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Fantastic. It's like I said at the beginning, you know, you've helped me so much personally, and that's why I know folks listening now are getting out of this. So let's talk about a second. What's trust got to do with it? Because I know what it's meant personally for me. So what does that help?
Yes. Okay, so many of us struggle with trust, of course, and it's really hard for some of us to remember ever trusting anyone, for that matter. And when I first thought about trusting others following abuse, I just felt a huge knot in my stomach. I was like, you got to be kidding me. You know, I'm not going to rely on the integrity of another person because I'd relied on the character of someone and he abused me.
Absolutely. And that trust was betrayed.
Right. And I also had a very hard time believing that people would not leave me or let me down or harm me. And I was just in this really terrible loop of being out to prove that no one could be trusted. And, of course, I was succeeding with flying colors, right? And so there are a few layers really involved when we think about trust, defining trust, trusting ourselves, trusting others, and really determining who is trustworthy. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do around just this one topic. But what I first want you all to become present to is the impact of not being able to trust yourself or others on your life. You know, for me, the impact of not trusting others was that I really walked around guarded all the time. It's kind of like I was operating behind this piece of gauze. I don't know if you've ever felt that, David. It's just like, I'm fuzzy, you're fuzzy. We're here together, but we're not really, you know, not really connected. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, David.
I was going to say, yeah, you were fuzzy. I ever heard it likened to being in a haze, you know, however you define it. Yeah, that's, I know exactly what you're saying by that.
Yeah. Exactly right. So now, as we think about trust, our focus is often on determining if others are trustworthy. And, of course, that's important. But trusting ourselves is actually the first step in coming to trust others. And at the end of the day, thinking about trusting others will prove to be this empty and meaningless endeavor if we don't have the confidence to judge situations with wisdom and clarity and set the boundaries that are necessary when others violate our trust. So to start off, I'd like you to take a moment to identify some areas in which you trust yourself and others in which you don't. So for example, for me, I trust myself to show up on time, but I don't trust myself so much when it comes to avoiding ice cream, especially if it has peanut butter in it. Okay. So you can, this doesn't have to be like hardcore, folks. You know, it can be anything, just whatever you can, you know, whatever comes to mind here, and you can use the handout to jot down your thoughts. You know, in what areas do you trust yourself to make good choices? In what areas do you doubt your ability to make good choices? And what I want you to notice is there's one key difference between the areas in which you trust yourself and the areas in which you don't. Practice. You may have had lots of practice with good results when it comes to, say, building a career. However, the same may not be true for setting boundaries with your partner. Yet if you go back to the very first time you chose your next step in your career, you maybe didn't feel that level of trust and confidence that you feel today. Right. Now, I sometimes think about it like driving a car for the first time. I know the first time I drove a car, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to run this thing off the cliff, right? And I was like, you know, hands on 10 and 2, got to pay attention, got to really focus. And I did not have any confidence that I was not going to run off the side of the road. Now, I just hop in the car and go. Right? And some would say there's a high chance that you'll run off the road with me. But I fully believe I'm a good driver.
Yeah, those California. Yeah, now you've become one of those California drivers. So, yeah.
It's true, right? So, you know, to begin developing trust and confidence in the areas in which you don't trust yourself, the first step is to create opportunities to practice. You know, and in all things, start small. You know, setting a goal that really focuses on just one area is a good place to begin. And on a more serious note, you know, there was a time in my life when I didn't trust myself to walk away from an abusive relationship. And I actually spent 10 years in one. Because I had more experiences of staying and taking it than of leaving. But today is quite the opposite, you know, because I've done lots of healing. And also because in instances when someone presents themselves in a way that is less than loving, I've been able to immediately step away so that the abuse doesn't even have an opportunity to happen. So I trust myself now to recognize potential abusers and to say no and walk away. And this is why this is so important, because being grounded in who we are, confident in our ability to really make good decisions, and to set and keep boundaries are the critical components that are necessary for trusting others and, as I've noted, is essential for having really great sex.
And just before I ask the next question, I noticed something in both of the previous points you've mentioned in both times, practicing or trying again, you know, that it was, there's a consistency in what you're talking about. And I just, that point came to me. So I wanted to say thank you for reminding us that that's something that we need to do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so how, and this is a tough one. How do we learn to trust others?
Yes, it is a tough one because we have all sorts of misunderstandings about trust. I know I certainly did. And furthermore, our like trust meter is often a bit off balance. Like we have it tilted way far to not trusting or trusting too easily or just being apathetic about it, never really connecting or pushing others away. So one of the first mistakes when determining who is trustworthy is looking for qualities in others that we ourselves lack. So again, I know I'm not very good at avoiding ice cream in the freezer. And if someone comes over and they aren't tempted at all, I might think, oh my gosh, this is a really trustworthy person. But that's a mistake. You know, just because they're able to do something that I'm not doesn't mean they're trustworthy. The second mistake we make is to believe that a violation of our trust is a statement about our value. When someone lets us down, we might think, oh, I must not be worth much. They must not really love me, right? So we need to remember to make breakdowns about the other person's ability to come through in a particular area. It's about them and not about our value. Because if we buy into that false belief, like linking trusting others to our value, we're never going to do it. No way. Yeah. There's like too much at stake, right? And the truth of the matter is that when someone doesn't keep a commitment, it's about their choice and their values, and it's not about whether they love or don't love us. And I'll give you a little example from my life. You know, one of the things that drives me bonkers, and I have no reason why, but when the floor is wet after someone takes a shower, you know, maybe I have like this paranoia about slipping and like cracking my head open. I don't know. But, you know, when my current partner moved in, I asked him, you know, hey, after a shower, can you wipe up the floor? Now, months later, I'm very clear that this is not a commitment he's willing to keep.
You've given it up.
Yep. Exactly. And there's just no value in it to him. He doesn't get it. And it has nothing to do with his love for me. See, in the past,
this is how
it would have gone down. I would have been like, well, if you really loved me, you'd wipe up the floor, right? And it would have become this big battle. And now I know it has nothing to do with that. It's just about a commitment he's not willing to keep. And because it's not a deal breaker, I just find a way around it, right?
Get one of those little, like the hotel thing, the things they put down at the hotel, those little short towels.
Yes, gosh, the wet floor. He has started warning me. Hey, wet floor, right? You know, and yeah, you know, but if I tied it to my value, it could cause a lot of disruption and upset. I'd have to be in continued battle with this person until he complied so that I could feel valued. And my goodness, that's just exhausting, right?
All right, so how do we get around that? How do we avoid those traps?
Okay, so first, we need to notice that trust is not about judging the character and quality of another person, because we suck at that, okay?
So right. We're
not even going to do a good job of it, so let's not even try. And that's really how we most often get ourselves in trouble in relationships and end up hurt. So instead, what we want to look at are the specific commitments that a person is willing to honor. And this requires an important and interesting change in our perspective about trust. Namely, that we never trust a person as a whole because no one is 100% trustworthy. So, for example, take a woman who's never missed a deadline but happens to cheat on her taxes. Okay, so here's an example of a person who is completely trustworthy when it comes to completing tasks on time, but not trustworthy when it comes to dealing with the IRS, right? But notice, if I happen to cheat on my taxes, not saying I do, but if I happen to, her behavior won't bother me. So not only is this about what a person commits to, but it's also about how those commitments align with our own values and commitments.
Right.
And for any given person, there are always some commitments we can trust, but there are always others that we can't. And by the way, notice that we already saw this in ourselves. We trust ourselves for some things and not for others, right? And I believe there's a lot of room to really let people be this way and not experience it as unsafe. It's just simply human nature. And, you know, what I've really discovered, David, is that the trap that we fall into as survivors in particular is thinking our job is to protect ourselves. And how we do that is by trying to make sure that people are 100% trustworthy in every single thing, every single moment. And if there's even a hint that they're not, boy, we just kick them to the curb. Right.
And it's just, we look back now and see how unrealistic that is. But in the moment, you feel it's completely logical.
That's it. Yeah. So what I'm proposing is it's our job to decide whether or not to trust someone by considering their behavior and speech as signals of their beliefs, their values, and intentions. And these are all indications of what commitments they're willing to keep and for how often and for how long. To make it really, really simple, rather than asking the question, can I trust you, or can I trust him, or can I trust her, which we know is a loaded question, and the answer is not always, not with everything. The real question we need to ask is, can I trust him or her to blank, you know, and put something specific, tangible, trackable in that space, right? Now, the next really important thing here is we want to begin thinking of trust as a spectrum rather than an all-or-nothing deal. You know, we may trust some people in our lives with just a few things and others more deeply. Not every person in our life needs to be trusted to the same degree. And I want you to imagine that you're at kind of the center of a hub and there are concentric circles kind of extending out around you. Now, when you first meet someone, they're on the outer circle, right? Because you have no clue what commitments they're willing to keep or not. So you spend some time together and in the process determine that they can keep certain commitments. So you bring them in a little bit closer to a new level, you know. And that also means there are new types of commitments that you now expect them to keep. So you check that out, see how they do, have some experiences, and assuming all goes well, you bring them in a bit closer. Now, let's say at this step, they aren't able to keep a commitment that is required for that level of trust. Well, all you have to do is just bump them back out a little circle further out. You know, you don't have to totally boot them out altogether, you know, like ejected button here. You know, we don't have to eject people from our lives just because they're not trustworthy in some areas. They can remain connected to us, but just at a different level. And, of course, a side note here, I'm not referring to extreme examples of keeping people in our lives who are not trustworthy because they're abusive. Right. I'm talking more like, oh, I have a friend who I told someone, you know, and I told her something private and she went and told somebody else. Okay. Well, I'm no longer going to share those sorts of things. Right. But I can still enjoy going to the movies with her. Right.
Just like you said, there's just different levels.
That's it. And really, one of the most beautiful outcomes for me is that I went from having just a few close friends to really having this bountiful community of people. I have friends who I see like once a month, and all we do is play Scrabble and drink tea. That's it. You know, and I have friends who I only talk about certain things with, and then I have friends who I share everything with, and between them all, I have a rich and rewarding circle of friends and acquaintances that really make my life exciting because they're constantly bringing in different things, different flavors. And certainly in regards to sex, my partner is off the hook now for having to meet like every single one of my needs.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so my relationship and my sex life became richer and more fulfilling because that tension and that frustration was no longer there.
And we both do this, both men and women. We do have this tendency to think that, okay, my wife, my partner, my whatever, has got to do every single, they need to be my everything. And they don't.
That's right.
Great insight. Thank you for that, Rachel.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Now, you know, our wife or our partner, now they're going to be on that inner circle. So it's going to be important that there's alignment among the commitments that are of higher value to you. So it's really important that we understand what commitments are at each level. Like having this clearly defined will help you in all of your relationships. And you can use the handout to kind of further explore this new way of thinking, you know, after our talk. You know, what commitments go on each of those circles. Now, finally, the great thing about trust is that it really serves as the gateway to experiencing vulnerability.
Now, wait a minute. Remember I said I'm a guy. Did you say vulnerability like it's a good thing?
I sure did. I sure did.
All right. I'm listening.
Okay. You know, I get it. You know, life after hurt or trauma or rejection can kind of feel like a battlefield. And we sort of become warriors, you know, constantly striving to guard ourselves from being wounded or hurt again. And by definition, being vulnerable means to be capable of or susceptible to being wounded or hurt. So is it any wonder that we adamantly resist vulnerability?
We want to walk through life without ever being hurt. Don't you know that?
That's it. Yeah, I know it. I do know it. And it's fair because, you know, we could have experienced these real moments where weakness, naivete, lack of control or power was used against us. And boy, once we escape that, we become really determined to never be used or harmed in such a way ever again. And I think the other thing that goes on here is, you know, we lose a sense of safety and security, which needs to be present in order to embrace vulnerability. And so in order to gain that sense of safety and security, we typically just resist vulnerability. And instead, we focus on being in control. So this is the countermeasure to vulnerability. Our need to be in control of outcomes drives so many of our behaviors. But this is where we really make the greatest error, because being controlling only provides a false sense of security. It's a total illusion. Whereas...
And that's tough for us guys to see that. You know that, because the guys were taught that.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Absolutely. But what's so cool is that through openness and really the kind of sharing and sensitivity that vulnerability requires, that's when we develop deep and strong connections that can be relied upon and trusted with greater and greater confidence. It's just a huge false belief to think that we can even actually prevent being vulnerable and avoid vulnerability altogether. You know, each of us, no matter what we do, even if we are the most controlling person ever, is susceptible to being physically or emotionally wounded. There's just no escaping vulnerability. So we might as well embrace it and use it to our benefit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how do we do that? Yeah. So here's the thing. I often hear people say, I hate being vulnerable. I can't stand being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's okay. Because I actually think vulnerability is just something that we do. And trying to get to a place where we enjoy vulnerability is actually a losing battle, because it's not something to like. It's not ice cream or our favorite meal. It's a challenge, and it's always a challenge. So striving to reach this place where we just enjoy being vulnerable, it's the wrong idea. And this is why people get so fed up or frustrated or think they can't do it. Instead, the idea is to learn how to increase our tolerance so that we don't fight being vulnerable when we need to be. So the first thing I want you to know about vulnerability is that it should move at the same pace as trust. So think of it like two levers. And as you move the trust lever forward, then the vulnerability lever moves forward too. And when we don't do that, wonky things happen. Okay, so for example, if I have the trust lever pushed way up, but I've held back the vulnerability lever, that's when you get these relationships where you understand what commitments the person's going to keep, you've been together for a long time, you know a lot of kind of like general stuff about each other, but there's always this feeling of like, I don't really know who this person is. I don't really feel like I like can tell you more than maybe two or three things about them, yet I've known them forever.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah. Now, if you push the vulnerability lever way forward, but you hold the trust lever back, that's when you get people who tell you their entire life story after meeting you for 5 minutes, right? Or you give a lot of yourself to other people and end up oftentimes getting hurt because you don't actually know yet what commitments they're willing to keep. So
right.
you dive in
right.
without knowing whether it's actually really safe or not. So as you're trusting, you want to let the vulnerability move. Trust a little, open a little. Trust a little, open a little. Keep those things paced together. And, you know, we can have all sorts of reasons why we want to avoid the vulnerability piece. You know, we think we're going to be hurt, taken advantage of. People will know things that we don't want them to know. And when if they do know, they're going to just run away screaming, right? Like if people really see me. And that's
right.
all tied in shame, which is a whole nother topic. But these are just the false beliefs that come about as a result of the experiences that we've had. And you can actually use the payoffs and cost skill that I taught you earlier to challenge the false beliefs that you have about vulnerability. Now, one of the things that happens when we're abused, and my goodness, I was so good at this one, is our risk meter just kind of gets broken. And we continuously engage in high-risk behaviors that reinforce negative beliefs. Then we're hurt, and we blame being vulnerable when the real problem may be who or what we're choosing to be open to and our poor evaluation of the risks involved.
That's
so
great.
A new skill, yeah, to develop is the ability to better evaluate and manage the risks involved. And again, this is in opposition to trying to control the risks. Essentially, it comes down to this difference. Managing and reducing risks versus trying to eliminate risk, okay? So we have all done things to try to eliminate risk. You know, perhaps in your relationships, you demand your partner checks in, you know, every hour. Or in your body, you only allow yourself to eat particular foods. Or in circumstances or environment, things have to be a very particular way or you get upset. This was one of my favorites. I was very much about controlling my environment in order to reduce risk or really eliminate risk. And it came down to like the Tupperware drawer, David. I would have like things in the Tupperware drawer a particular way, not just like tossed in, but like this is where you put this, this is where you put this. And if my partner puts something in there the wrong way, well, you better
how
duck.
How dare you?
Because that's Tupperware. Yeah. I mean,
there's a lot of CD going on there.
Oh, my gosh. So, you know, by trying to create, I was like trying to control my environment to create a quote-unquote safe haven, right? Now, you know, one of my clients really intent on maneuvering to get some guarantee that his partner would never leave would text him every couple of hours in order to keep tabs on him. And if he didn't get an immediate response, he would think, oh, he must be with someone else. He's cheating on me. And, you know, as we worked together to really challenge his false beliefs, he first had to acknowledge that while it was possible that his partner was with someone else, it was unlikely given all the experiences they had shared. And
right.
Furthermore, his partner's actions time and again indicated he was committed. So the risk he was taking and trusting, therefore, seemed well calculated. So he then decided that he would wait for 4 hours after sending a text.
A whole 4 hours.
Whole 4 hours. And, you know, and then he also had to limit his texting to 3 times a day. So that's kind of like, you know, the 4 hour stretches. So, you know, and over time, you know, his fear and anxiety gradually abated and he was able to form a much deeper bond based on trust and respect rather than fear and anxiety. And as you can imagine, their sex life also improved because his partner, rather than feeling like controlled and manipulated and managed,
mm-hmm.
started feeling like he's being treated like a grown man and a partner. And so that creates openness, right?
Well, and
now,
it seems like, too, if you do that, it could almost become that if you do that fear and hang on that fear and anxiety, it could almost become a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't mean to get off on a tangent. It just made me think
it.
Of it. But if you keep thinking, oh, this, you know, my wife or my partner is cheating on me, well, you may drive them to that if you don't begin that level of acceptance and trust.
Yes, exactly so. Exactly so. So what I want to share with you all is a step-by-step process that will help you both evaluate the risk level and manage, reduce the risk so you can shift these behaviors and embrace vulnerability. So I'm going to go through this fairly quickly, but I will give you the recording so you can come back and refer to this, and it's also on the handout. First thing, evaluate the risk on a scale of 1 to 10 and really be clear about how high or low the risk really is, not your perceived risk, but what it really is. Because us survivors, we love to look at butterflies and think they're the most dangerous thing in the world, but a tiger, we will like, hey, come over here and cuddle, right? So you've got to really look at it. And it's also okay to take big risks. You just want to know how much risk you're going to be managing. The next step is to ask yourself, like, I'm most worried that blank might happen if I take this risk. And then you ask yourself, okay, what is it that I could do to minimize or reduce the risk beforehand, right? And if a thing that I'm scared about happens, creating a game plan. The first thing that I do is blank. The next thing, if that doesn't work, is blank. And the worst case scenario is, and if that happens, what will I do? And the main thing to remember is if things don't go as planned, don't fall into the trap of thinking, well, I should have never done that, shouldn't have opened up, shouldn't have shared that. Just remember to keep it local and specific to the situation. So, for example, one of my clients struggled with flashbacks during sex. And he determined that the risk level of having a flashback was a 7. This was happening so often, so frequently. And he was most afraid that his new partner would think he was defective, right, if a flashback occurred when they had sex for the first time. So he talked about how he could discuss it with her beforehand, what strategies he could use to stay present in the moment, and talk through the various scenarios, how they might play out, what he would do. And he decided to have a conversation with his partner and gave her some specific things she could do to help him remain present, you know, looking into his eyes, saying his name. And by using this process, he was able to notice, okay, the risk is not that great. At the end of the day, here's how I'm going to manage it. And then he was able to open up and be vulnerable and created a deeper connection with his partner. So I just want to pause here and give each of you who are listening an opportunity to think about just one small area in your life where you could step in to vulnerability and use this, you know, jot it down now and then come back later and apply the process that we've discussed. And if you get stuck, you're not sure where to go with it, just send me an email and I'll help you out with it. And the last little thing I want to say about vulnerability is it's always going to be a challenge, okay? It's still a challenge for me. You know, sometimes easier, sometimes not. But I can tell you that I have a higher tolerance for being vulnerable than I did years ago. And literally by having a system in place where you can manage and reduce risk, it absolutely makes being vulnerable more accessible. And the last thing is, you know, we really want to understand that there is always risk involved in everything we do, in every relationship that we have, but without the risk, there's no chance for the reward. And when I was thinking about this topic, David, and researching and reading, and I often start with the definition of words, and I shared with you all the first part of the definition, but here's the second part in the context of a bridge game. Liable to increased penalties, but entitled to increased bonuses after winning the game. And I love that because to be vulnerable in this card game means that we will likely experience penalties. Sometimes it's not going to work. Sometimes people are going to hurt us. But we're also promised increased bonuses upon winning. And in this game of life, to be vulnerable really means that we will have disappointments. There is a risk, but we get the payoffs that are many: intimacy, connection, adventure, authenticity, joy, great sex, independence. There's just so many that come from us being able to embrace vulnerability.
And like you and I discussed before the show started, you know, just having celebrated, and I truly mean celebrated, my first inner wedding anniversary with my incredible wife, Linda. What you're saying rings so true to me. You know, by making myself vulnerable because I knew I could trust has increased those bonuses so tremendously. So it really, what you're preaching when put into practice absolutely pays off. So
yeah, awesome.
I just had to share a little bit. Sorry about that. Well, let me ask you another question. Why is the whole we talked about getting? Why is getting out of our heads and reconnecting with the present moment so important? You mentioned that being present. So why is that so important?
Right. Well, you know, when it comes to relationships, we are often driven by the fear of the unknown. Like, we don't know if the people we're connecting to may one day withdraw their protection, their support, or just simply disappear. You know, the part of the definition of abandonment is to be forsaken, you know, and not just a little bit, but utterly.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, the greater the connection, the greater the risk. Because we really have more at stake should the person choose to walk away. And in an effort to alleviate this terrible sense of not knowing, we often do a variety of things. We over-control, seek constant assurance, or are just on like high alert for anything that looks like withdrawal. And worst case scenario, as soon as we start to feel close, we actually push away and sabotage the relationship. And all of that keeps us in our head. You know, all of that is evaluation, analysis, cognitive. And this fear of abandonment, which is ultimately what drives all those behaviors, is really common in those of us who've been abused because we have experienced very real and tangible abandonment, you know, that loss of protection. And it's a scary thing to have been through, and it's a scary thing to think about going through again. You know, for me, I had a really strong belief that people were always going to leave. And as a result, in my relationships, oh my gosh, David, it was crazy. I pick fights, drama, find problems. And I would literally try to goad the other person into leaving. Like, will you stay if I do this? Well, what if I do this? Well, what if I do this really ridiculous thing, right? And, you know, my partners would stay for a bit, but eventually they'd have to say, woman, enough is enough, right? And they'd just be exhausted and frustrated, and they would leave. And, of course, I would get to, you know, feel redeemed and be like, see, people always are going to leave me.
Your
so
false precept was reinforced.
Yes. And it's a hard thing to acknowledge, you know, but we have to be honest about the role that we play that leads us to recreate the experience of being abandoned over and over again. So I really want to encourage everyone to reflect upon the losses that you've experienced that you're now trying to protect yourself from again. And what ways do you contribute, if at all, to this cycle of loss?
Well, what will we do about this?
Okay, well, so how the kind of the antidote to all of that, being in your head, being in the future, is that, you know, when I was thinking about this topic, it really became clear that the way I was behaving was not working. You know, throwing Tupperware was not helpful. And so I read the definition of again, and I noticed that the second definition was to give up control. And David, I just began thinking about, like, where in my life do I feel like I can release control but still feel safe? And I realized that it's when I'm dancing with my hip-hop company. And, you know, I noticed whenever I was performing, if I started thinking ahead to what was coming next, where is this going, what are we doing, what's going to happen, what are they going to do, I would miss a step or I'd get off beat. But when I just abandoned myself to the moment, gave up control, and stayed present, everything went smoothly. And so I say we really need to abandon ourselves to abandonment. We need to shift our focus and energy away from trying to prevent the withdrawal of others and enter into an open, free space where we're present to the fact that they're here with us right now in this moment. So instead of maneuvering to kind of get some guarantee that they're always going to be here no matter what, we appreciate the person for being here right now.
Yes.
Yeah, and you can think about what strategies you already know for that. Some of my favorites are just simply like naming objects that are in the room. That's really good for reminding yourself where you are. Even little mantras like right here, right now. Like, I'm so glad you're with me here in this moment, and I don't need to do anything but enjoy that. I don't need to figure out what comes next. I don't need to get you to tell me where we're going or where we're heading. And, you know, a final thought, though, is, like, looking into the future isn't inherently a bad thing. Like, we can look into the future and be inspired. So if you think, man, I really want to spend the rest of my life with this person, you know, then if that inspires us to become more open and generous and loving, that's a good thing. Like, let the future be an inspiration rather than fear-producing. And I have to tell you, like, once I really started this, and it can be hard because we really want to get to that, like, what comes next and where are we going and all of that. But when we start to experience being in relationship from this place of I'm here with this person right now, this is where I am in my life right now. The ease and comfort that comes with that is amazing. See, I thought for so long that manipulating, being in charge, attempting to control everything, that was how I was going to create ease and safety and comfort. But all it produced was stress and anxiety and upset and kept me focused on all of the wrong things. I was, being overreacted, basically a whole lot of yuck. we'll sum it up that way. And, you know, what I found is whenever I adamantly really bring myself back to right here and right now, and it helps me to make really powerful choices about the risks that I'm taking. And as we talked about earlier, that's really when we have peace in our lives. And at the end of the day, you know, having a great sex life begins with overcoming our fears, learning to trust in a healthy way, increasing our tolerance for vulnerability, and remaining present with our partners.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, can you tell us a little bit more on how we can build upon what you've shared and all the things we've gone over and learned today?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, oh my gosh, and I'm sure you can relate to this, I spent so many years of my life just feeling disconnected, even when in relationships. You know, I was just scared that I was just too broken to be fixed and that nothing was going to make a difference. And sex was difficult, or it often felt like an obligation rather than a choice. And I often, you know, found myself worrying that I was just going to end up, you know, old and alone. And looking back, not knowing how to actually be in relationship with someone not only affected my sex life, it also caused me to feel miserable and exhausted and frustrated. And I certainly don't want that to happen for you all who are listening today. It really is my hope that in our time together, you've come to see how very important it is to first build a solid foundation for relationships in order to then be able to address sex and sexuality directly. And instead of becoming disheartened and hopeless, I really hope that you feel confident that you can and will get better, because I know you will. Now, I want to tell you about the support that I can provide you in taking the next steps towards having the relationships and sex life you really desire and deserve. I'd like to tell you about my special virtual Beyond Surviving group for men that starts September 2nd. This program has been specifically designed for male survivors who are ready to roll up their sleeves and really want to gain specific skills and tools to let go of the pain of the past and finally move on with their lives.
I just want to interject one quick thing before you tell us about some of the things. I just want to really tell the audience, let them know, it wasn't until I worked with one of your program with the Beyond Surviving that how I was able to begin doing all of the things you're talking about. And so I just want to tell folks just how real, how important, and how much of a difference it can make in their lives. And I just want to stress that to them, to really listen to the things you're going to tell them and to really consider being a part of it, because I know what a difference it made in my life. I told you about celebrating 1 year anniversary. You were a big part of that, and your program was a big part of that. So I just wanted to interject that before I lost my train of thought on it. I'm sorry. Please go ahead and share.
No, it's totally fine. How dare you tell people how often you are nowadays? The work you've done. No, I'm so proud of you, and it has been so wonderful watching you grow in these years and really coming into so much from our time working together. Absolutely. And really, you know, you are such a testament, because you are my guy, right? Like, you have your shit together, you're getting on in life, but just something is not working. And you just need those specific, like, little tweaks, like some skills and tools, some support and guidance, and everything falls into place. And that's really, at the end of the day, you know, by participating in this program, what folks can expect. You know, we're going to start off by really identifying the beliefs that are stopping you from having an amazing relationship. And most importantly, then, I'm going to teach you how to retrain your brain so that you can get off of this emotional roller coaster of, like, feeling good one day, miserable the next. I'm also going to guide you in really letting go of any shame or guilt or any belief that the abuse was your fault, so you can connect to your needs and desires. And we have to be able to do that if we're going to communicate to other people what we need and have emotional relationships, have sexual relationships, and often shame and guilt shut that down. I'm going to really work with you to break down the walls that keep you from connecting with others. And we're also going to do a lot around self-confidence so you can take on the things that you want to take on in your life. You're going to learn how to set boundaries and create intimacy and have a great sex life. And most importantly, you're going to connect with, like, that person who is supposed to be here in the world before any of that bullshit happened to you, and you get to just go out into your life and live from that place, as opposed to through the lens of the past. So a couple of things you need to know about the group is we will meet weekly on Wednesdays at 2:30 p.m. Pacific, 5:30 p.m. Eastern for a period of 4 months. You're also going to be invited to attend a monthly Q&A where you can find additional support and coaching, and that will be in addition to 2 15-minute laser coaching sessions that you'll have with me one-on-one. And I also want to tell you about 2 exclusive bonuses that you'll receive. First, I'm including a free digital copy of my guidebook, Beyond Surviving, The Final Stage in Recovery from Sexual Abuse, which is what we're going to really use at the end of the day for our roadmap, for our journey. Second, you'll receive my Relationships That Rock 8-part teleseminar that has experts from all over the place coming in and sharing their expertise about relationships among the things that are explored: why we don't have the love and support we need and want, what causes sexual blocks and how to remove them, how to feel and know your desires, and how to communicate with your partner for maximum safety and surrender. And the value of the bonuses alone is $420. The program and the bonuses all together is a value of $3,300. But I'm offering this program to you today for $987 or 8 payments of $135. So if you're really ready to let go of the past, like, right now, if you can commit to attending a weekly meeting by phone, if you're comfortable talking about your experience, listening to others, and if you're really ready to be a part of a community of survivors who are cheering each other on, then please, please don't put off making this important decision today, because there are only 6 spots available. And applications will be processed on a first-come, first-served basis, and the deadline for applying is August 26th. But if you apply within the next 24 hours, you'll also receive a bonus one-on-one This Is How You Tick session with me that will help you identify your personality type and teach you how to use this information to really understand yourself and relate to others better. So, you know, my clients...
I've done this too. I'm telling you, you guys, really, you really would benefit. Good stuff, I promise you.
Thanks, David. Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, what my clients are just, I have the best clients in the world, I believe. And, you know, they go on to do just such amazing things. You know, having a healthy romantic relationship, experiencing the enormous weight of abuse being lifted, becoming confident in their ability to ask for what they want from people, and, you know, no more fear of rejection, instead feeling empowered, having a sense of purpose. You know, one of my clients said on the very first day of our work together, like, don't even try to get me into a relationship. Like, I'm so done. I'm so done. And I know it's impossible. I'm never going to trust anyone again. And I, you know, through our work together, he was really able to let go of anger and resentment. He learned how to trust himself first. We tuned up his trust meter. And, you know, as a result, he's been in a long-term relationship, and he just told me the other day that he's planning to propose. So I love that.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's just, that's like,
awesome.
That sort of change is so amazing, and I really want you to experience what this client has and be able to feel that success. Like, you owe it to yourself to try. And so to learn more and to apply to be a member of this group, you just go to bit.ly/groupprogrammen. So bit.ly/groupprogrammen. And I'll be sending out that link after our call today as well. So if you didn't happen to get it, don't worry. It'll be there in an email soon. So so there we are. There we are, David. And I want to just take a moment to really thank everyone for being here with me tonight and allowing me to be a part of your personal journey. You know, I've been where you're at. So please always...
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of tonight. And just, you know, I can't stress it to the guys that are listening. You know, what you offer is real. It is meaningful. It's not, you know... It really has helped not only myself but a lot of folks out there.
Thanks, David.
So we thank you.
Thank you so much. So if you have any questions or you have any concerns about or anything about the group, if you want to have a chat before you apply, feel free to give me a call or shoot me an email. You can reach me at coach@rachelgrantcoaching.com. Again, I'll be sending you all a follow-up email tonight. And David, I just really want to take a moment to acknowledge you and say thank you for the just wonderful hosting and sharing of your journey as well tonight. It's really been great to have you here and to get to connect with you again and share this little adventure with you.
Absolutely. It's become a grand journey now that the changes that I've seen in my life and that you've been able to witness and be a part of, and just like I said, I can't thank you enough. And I know we got a lot more ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. Awesome. So thank you for everyone, and have a good rest of your evening, and we'll see you again soon. Take good care. Good night, all.
Night.